Chapter 10. He climbed into the car behind Happy with a terse, "You could have said something," which only caused Happy to laugh harder. "Boss said you two were going to tour the site for the new reactor project, so I'm to take you there," Happy informed him. Steve just sighed, shaking his head at Tony's machinations. He thought about the long kiss this morning as he was leaving, Tony reminding him to think of it when he was on his way home. Because, of course, Tony knew he was bested. Steve also thought of Tony mentioning how his father would be gone for weeks at a time, but always return with a smile, pat on the head, and an expensive gift. It was hardly any wonder Tony had learned to show affection by lavishing ridiculous gifts on people, Steve thought with a disgruntled sigh. When they arrived at their destination, he found it was a private airport, not a piece of land waiting for a reactor site. And by tour, Tony meant fly over it in his private jet. He ducked his head as he climbed on board the sleek jet marked as Stark Industries. Tony was sitting in one of the plush leather seats, Cheshire Cat grin on his face. "Really?" Steve asked. "I don't know if I should be flattered by the interest or deeply concerned by your need to control things," he said dryly. "Can I pick?" Tony offered. Steve couldn't stop the bark of laughter from escaping. "Come on, have some champagne and brunch. Enjoy the view and ignore the control freak across from you," Tony said lightly. But Steve could tell there was an edge of nervousness about him that Steve recognized for uncertainty, probably wondering exactly how Steve was going to react to this level of meddling. "You didn't have to buy the company or the building. I don't need all that from you, you know," Steve said, sitting down and buckling up as he heard the engines roar to life. But I guess for today, I'll just say thanks." Tony started to chime in, but Steve cut him off. "This once, Tony. Just this once," he said firmly. "Of course," Tony replied, lying through his teeth. Steve sighed, splaying his hand across his forehead and rubbing his temples. "You're what my mom would call incorrigible, you know that?" Steve said. "When you're as rich as I am, it's pronounced eccentric," Tony corrected. Steve gave up and looked out the window as the world grew smaller below them. When they reached the site for the new arc reactor plant, which would provide clean energy to a good third of California when completed, Tony lapsed into excited chatter about where this or that part was going to go, how the delivery system worked, and all kinds of other technical jargon that Steve let just wash over him, enjoying the sound of Tony's voice, punctuated with enthusiasm and the spark in his eyes as he talked nonstop. He knew how important this was to Tony. A way to prove that Stark Industries could be more than something that just contributed destruction and death to the world. He just hoped the board would be able to see it that way too. The next day, Steve was back at work at the construction site because he insisted and had made Tony promise not to interfere, though Steve could tell he wasn't happy about it. He watched Happy drive up just in case before going to meet Clint and Bucky. He looked down at his new Stark phone and resisted the urge to call Tony, thinking about how he'd left him this morning, snuggled up in bed, hair mussed and a bit of drool coating the pillow he'd smashed his face into. "Adorable," Steve thought with a smile. When the phone buzzed at lunch, he picked it up immediately, expecting to hear Tony mocking him. But it was Ms. Romanoff. He didn't even bother to wonder how she'd gotten this number so fast. "So, I hear Stark wants something exclusive," she said by way of greeting. "Can't say I'm surprised, and quite frankly a little relieved, I have to tell you." "Relieved?" Steve asked, curious. "Well," she stretched out the word. "I've been concerned for a while now about the power dynamics here," she answered. "What? Tony wouldn't. He's nothing like that," Steve stammered. "Hmm? Oh, no, that's par for the course. I just send Nick out to have a little discussion with the client about boundaries. Not that I could do that with Stark. Normally, I'd threaten to blackmail him with incriminating pictures or something." "Pictures?" Steve said sharply, stomach dropping. "Oh, don't worry about that. Stark would just have them printed up and sent out as Christmas cards. unless, of course, it involved you, which just illustrates exactly what I mean, she said. I don't follow, Steve said, utterly confused. It appears someone hacked my system and deleted all records relating to you, she explained. I have outstanding security protocols. That should not have happened. That's what I mean about the power dynamics, Steve. Stark is too big to fail, see? Not much I can do to get at him. Even if I had anything, the politicos and power brokers would just circle the wagons. He's one of them, after all. On the other hand, what do you suppose would happen if you casually mention one day that you don't think you're being treated just right by the agency? What? I don't know what you mean. Why would I? Steve said, shaking his head, trying to follow the twists of her logic. Well, that's the question that keeps me up at night, Steve, she said evenly. And don't even get me started on what happened with Hammer. Wait, what happened with Hammer? Steve asked. You don't watch the news? It's all they can talk about now. Feds raided his place last night, apparently after receiving a download of his server with evidence that he'd been bribing military officers and politicians in return for Hammer Industries being awarded various contracts. They found that, and a lot more, when they went out there, including some rather disturbing videos involving Hammer and others, including said bigwigs, enough GHB to start a factory, and some of those videos featured several slightly under the age of consent boys. Not from my agency, mind you, she said quickly, as if that was the important point. Steve felt his stomach turn. He's sitting in a federal prison right now. Judge refused to grant bail, she informed him. So, you can see that from my point of view, this new arrangement with Stark, getting you off the payroll and letting him buy out the contract for a considerable settlement fee, of course, is not unwelcome. About the last thing I want is Tony Stark for an enemy. It's one thing to hack my files, Steve, but I don't want to find the feds or, God forbid, the IRS knocking on my door because Stark thinks I've treated you unfairly. Steve just nodded, mind numb at the overload of information. So, about the contract. Anything you want to specify? We usually set it up with a condo, leased vehicle, monthly stipend, clothing allowance, that kind of thing. Is there anything in particular you wanted to add? She asked, all business again. No, I'd just like to wait just a bit. On the contract, I mean. I need a couple of days, Steve said. There was silence on the other end of the phone. I'm not saying no or anything, but I need the weekend to get things in order, he finished, knowing she'd probably see right through him. He had to tell Tony about his mom. Soon. Friday was the board meeting on the clean energy project and the dinner afterwards. Let Tony get through that, and then they could have a real conversation. Steve still wasn't quite sure how to break it to him, other than being certain that before they went much further, they simply had to get everything out in the open. I suppose I can stall Stark for a couple days, but I need a yes or no by Saturday, she said. That should be fine, he agreed. Oh, and you ought to know. There's a mutuality clause in there, Stark's doing, she added. Mutuality clause? He repeated in question. Basically that the exclusivity goes both ways, she said. No stepping out for either of you. Thought you'd like to know. Yeah, thanks, Steve responded, hanging up. He hadn't really let himself think much about the idea of Tony finding someone else, but at Ms. Romanoff's words felt a weight he didn't know he'd been carrying lift from his chest, and something warm seeped down and fill in the empty places to replace it. It was so close, so very, very close to what he wanted. He sighed. Close was better than what most people get in their whole lifetime. It would be enough. It would have to be. Friday night, Steve stepped out of the bathroom after a shower and shave to find a tuxedo laid out on the bed, complete with shoes and cufflinks. He was far from an expert, but knew quality when he saw it. It fit like a glove, too, and Steve refused to think much on how well Tony knew his measurements. He dressed with care. fingers finding the tiny buttons a lot easier to get on than to get off when your whole body is shaking. He was struggling with the cufflinks a bit when strong arms wrapped around his waist and drew him close. He could smell Tony's aftershave as he buried his face against Steve's back and smiled as he felt the faint press of the arc reactor. Tony had taken to not covering it, at least around Steve. "How did it go?" Steve asked without turning. "As well as could be expected," Tony said with a resigned but not unhappy sigh. "Most of the board was supportive, if not wholly convinced. Others are terrified the stock will crash and not recover when we announce. I was surprised that Obi wasn't more enthused. I thought I had him on board." "Obi is Mr. Stane, your dad's friend," Steve said, trying to recall what Tony had told him about the makeup of the board. "Yeah, he's been with the company for ages. After my dad died, he ran it for years. He's old school, you know. Been in weapons for decades. Hard to change all that overnight, I guess," Tony explained. But Steve could hear the undercurrent of disappointment in his voice. "I'm sure he'll come around, Tony," Steve assured. "After all, you convinced me it's not at all creepy for you to buy the building I live in and the company I work for, so I'm sure you can convince him of most anything," Steve said with a smile. Steve turned into Tony's embrace, wrapping his arms around him and letting his head fall to rest on Tony's forehead. "It'll be okay. You'll see. They'll come around as soon as they see it working. No one likes change. Well, except you." Tony huffed in gratitude. "Ready to get this party started?" Steve looked down. "I guess so." He smiled at Tony, noting how good Tony looked in his own tuxedo, slightly different from Steve's, but they were clearly designed to complement the other. He couldn't help but notice how Tony's eyes darkened and his breath hitched as he held Steve at arm's length to give him a once-over. Steve's mind called up images of that first night, Tony watching him from the sofa as he undressed, dropping his borrowed suit on the floor. He remembered how nervous he'd been, fingers shaking, wondering what Tony would expect next. He felt his mouth go dry, imagining doing something similar tonight, this time without the fear. He thought about Tony's reaction to that, and a thrill of anticipation shot through him. He had the sense that Tony's thoughts were running along the same lines as he caught the man's eyes, pupils blown wide, as he traced light fingers down the sleeves and over the cuffs of Steve's suit. Tony cleared his throat. "You know, it occurs to me that, one, having other people over here tonight was a terrible idea, and, two, that the faster we get out there, the faster we can be done and get back here." "You always have the best plans," Steve said with a smile, following Tony out to greet the guests as they arrived. Dinner was a lavish affair. Steve found Pepper laughing and not too subtly teasing Tony about his recent acquisitions. Tony waved her off with a quick, "Art. Steve likes art. You, talk art." Talking art ended up being a great conversation about various contemporary styles that Pepper was trying to incorporate into Tony's collection. He met Rhodey, who told wild stories about Tony's younger days and bonded with Steve over a shared love of comics, as well as several other close friends and associates. The wine was flowing. The food was delicious. There was a bit of a celebratory air to the evening, though Steve suspected a lot of it was relief on Tony's part to be finally past this step and moving on to something concrete. After dinner finished, the group dispersed, and Tony disappeared with Rhodey and another gentleman down to the garage to ogle the cars. Pepper was in deep conversation with a shrewd-looking man from SI's logistical division named Phil. Finally deciding seeking Tony out didn't look too needy, Steve checked the garage, finding it empty, and then trudged back upstairs, feeling rather pathetic trying to track Tony down like this. The man was gone 10 minutes and Steve was already on edge. He wandered down the hall, checking various rooms. He stepped into the library, turning around after finding it empty, and then nearly jumping out of his skin when a voice called, "Looking for Tony, eh?" Sorry? Steve questioned the room. Mr. Stain unfurled from his spot in one of the high-backed chairs that faced the rarely used fireplace. Stain pressed his cigar into the nearby ashtray and walked to the bar. Drink? He queried. No, thank you, Steve replied politely. I didn't mean to bother you. I was just looking for where Tony'd gotten off to. He trailed off, not wanting to be rude to Tony's longtime friend, but also wanting to continue looking for Tony. These people, while as nice as they could possibly be, were Tony's people, not his, and he couldn't help but feel out of his element. Well, isn't that a coincidence? I'm sort of finding myself looking for where Tony got off to these days as well, Stain replied, walking around the bar and placing himself between Steve and the door, standing just a little too close, a little too much in Steve's personal space for it not to be deliberate. When Stain smiled, it was all teeth. Steve felt something shift in the room, something that said, "Leave," as clearly as if Jarvis had shouted it. See, Tony's always been a bit of a, well, let's call him a flight risk, if you will. Big ideas. Oh, it's great, it's great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've known Tony his whole life. Brilliant, no doubt, Stain said, splaying his palms in front of him, trying to suggest an innocence that he could not possibly think he was pulling off. But he can get his head stuck up in the clouds and all, you know? Big ideas, big dreams, big risks. This clean energy thing. And he said it the way Steve's mom had talked about Mrs. Rushman down the hall when she started in with selling homemade candles. See, we're a weapons manufacturer, Steve. Always have been. That's our bread and butter. I helped build this company from scratch when we were barely able to cobble together bullet casings. And now Tony gets kidnapped and comes up with some crazy idea. And I really do think that we get that sorted out. But then, well, you come along, and now all of a sudden Tony's the clean energy Svengali, wanting to bring hope and change to the unwashed masses. And we're shutting down production on those lovely profit-producing smart bombs. You can understand my concern, right, Steve? There was something unnerving about the way Stain kept saying his name. Steve couldn't put a finger on why, but he didn't like it. Actually, no, not really. If you know Tony half as well as you say you do, then you know when he says he can do something, he can do it. This isn't something he's doing on a whim, Mr. Stain. He knows what this can do. It really can change the world, make it a better place. And when you have that kind of chance, how can you ask him to turn his back on that? Knowing him as well as you do, I mean. Steve asked pointedly. Stain smiled, and there was nothing nice in that look, Steve thought. Stain stepped closer, clapping a large hand on his shoulder, the weight just a little too hard to be friendly. I've been in this business a long time, Steve. Seen a lot of nonsense ideas come and go, Stain said. You mentioned, Steve reminded him. Know lots of people. It's sort of a small community when you get down to it, Stain told him. And it clicked seconds before the denouement was out of Stain's mouth. Heard a lot about you from Justin. Before his unfortunate incarceration, of course, Stain said, leaning in as if they were conspirators. Steve knocked Stain's hand off his shoulder and stepped away in one fluid motion. It isn't nonsense. He can do it. I'm sorry if that thought terrifies you, but it's Tony's company. I know he'd appreciate your support, Steve said, not really meaning it. But he doesn't need it. He turned to head for the door. It was a shame I didn't get a chance to meet you that night at the benefit. I was so looking forward to it after Justin mentioned it. I saw you over by the bar. Can't fault me for noticing. But Tony always did like collecting beautiful things, Stain shrugged. Steve felt his mouth go dry. There are some friends I'd like you to meet later, he remembered Hammer saying. But Stain wasn't finished, not by a long shot. How do you suppose it would go over with the board to find out that Tony's paying a certain high-priced agency for the pleasure of your company every night, Steve? Not that I blame him, mind you. Hard for investors to trust someone who pays for it with billions of dollars, you know. And what would the board think if they knew that Tony's latest little obsession was on the advice of his hooker? Stane asked, seemingly idly wondering, as if the concern had just occurred to him. After Afghanistan, well, you can imagine how that would look. Concern has already been raised about his mental condition. Totally understandable after what happened, of course, but this? Well, this doesn't look good, Steve. Surely you can see that. It would be a shame if the board felt it necessary to remove him after all he's accomplished, at least until recently. Steve felt the floor shift under him. All the air sucked out of the room. Stane was threatening Tony. Steve felt his hands ball into fists of their own accord. He needed to get out of here. What Stane was saying, it couldn't be true. They couldn't take away Tony's company because of Steve, surely. Stane moved closer, and Steve could smell the stale cigar on him, sickly sweet. I'd hate to see that happen to Tony. After all the hard work he's done, wouldn't you, Steve? I hope I can count on you to do the right thing here for Tony. For Tony, Steve echoed. You don't know the first thing about Tony, and certainly aren't doing any of this for his sake. This is about you and keeping whatever power it is you think you have. But if you think you can do that at Tony's expense, you have seriously miscalculated. He shrugged away from Stane, brushing past him to head for the door. He'd heard enough. He wanted to find Tony and warn him. He didn't exactly know what he'd say, except somehow convince Tony that the person he grew up with as a father figure actually despised him. Not much of a plan, but he'd take it. Stane shrugged, not arguing with Steve's conclusion. Tell you what, Steve, here's the deal. I don't want to see Tony cut out. He's the golden goose, see? But we need that goose to stop chasing rainbows and unicorns and do what needs to be done. Surely you can see that. So how about this? You stop pretending you're something you're not. Quit filling Tony's head with nonsense about what great things he can accomplish. Stick to using that pretty mouth for what it was intended, and maybe we can work something out. Let Tony go back to doing what he does best, building things that go boom, not this ridiculous energy thing. And no one has to get hurt here, Steve, Stane offered. I can make it worth your while. I know you need money, Steve, Stane continued. There isn't any reason this can't be mutually beneficial when you play by the rules. He's weak, Steve. You can see that. You say jump, and look how easily he begs you to tell him how high. He's so desperate to please, it's revolting. That's not the kind of man you can respect, Steve. You don't want that. You don't need that. You'd find I can be just as generous as Tony under the right conditions. Once you've learned how this kind of thing goes, Steve, whatever you think you have with Tony, you could find something far more satisfying with someone who understands how all this is supposed to work, who can give you what you really need, Stane said, his voice low with threat and something else Steve recognized as arousal. Stane liked this. This power liked it a lot. He was dangerous, Steve knew. Dangerous to Tony. Steve's face hardened. He'd had enough of whatever it was Stane was suggesting. Wanted to find Tony and somehow protect him from all this. How, he had no idea. If Stane told the board about Steve's relationship with Tony, there was no telling what they would do. The thought made his stomach clench. It had never occurred to him that somehow this could hurt Tony's business. There had to be a way to counteract that, though. Something that Steve's jumbled mind wasn't thinking of. Tony, though. Tony would know what to do. This was Tony's world. He lived and breathed it. He'd figure something out. Steve had to believe that. The idea that he had somehow cost Tony this much, he just couldn't. It was too horrible to contemplate. Mr. Stane, I don't imagine there are any conditions under which a scared bully like you would be half the man Tony Stark is on his worst day, Steve said, intending to leave it at that and find Tony because damn if he was going to let the man have the last word. He wasn't sure if it was the shock of it or the impact of the back of Stain's hand against his mouth that caused him to stagger back, knocking into a side table and spilling the ashtray of cigar detritus all over the Turkish rug. "That will stain," Steve thought stupidly for a moment, tasting blood where the inside of his cheek had scraped his teeth, and looking at Stain, both seemingly momentarily frozen by shock. But Steve wasn't blind to the shift of something behind Stain's surprise. "Get out!" Tony's voice sounded like a whip crack in the room. Steve looked up to see Tony and Happy standing in the library entrance. Tony's face, a mask of utter rage, eyes glittering, mouth a hard line. Stain shifted slightly. "If he touches him again, you can shoot him," Tony said almost lightly to Happy. And for the first time, Steve noticed that there was a bulge under Happy's evening jacket, a reminder that Happy was, after all, Tony's bodyguard. And for the first time, actually looked the part. "You're really going to throw this all away because of this, Stain started. "I wouldn't suggest finishing that sentence," Tony replied, stone-faced. Stain straightened his suit jacket and made to walk out, stopping as he brushed past Tony. "You have no idea the mistake you're making here, Tony, my boy. I've always tried to look out for you, even when you were your own worst enemy." Tony just stared unwaveringly at him. "Obi, for the service you've done my family, I'm not having your ass hauled out either in handcuffs or on a stretcher. Get out and never come back. Ever, Obi. We're done. We are so very, very done." Fine, Tony. You want to live in your pretend world and run the company into the ground playing hero? Fine. But you're a bigger idiot than I thought if you think this," Stain waved towards Steve, "is something real, something worth salting the earth on the company over. But I should have known. You've always been so desperate, Tony. Never good enough, not for Howard, not for anyone. You think this is the real thing?" Stain asked derisively, shaking his head. Tony didn't take his eyes off Steve as Steve pressed the back of his hand to his sore mouth. "It's the most real thing I've ever known, but you wouldn't know anything about that." Stain snorted. "Oh, Tony, this is really quite pathetic, my boy, even for you," Stain said, shaking his head in mock sadness. And Steve saw it fractions of a second before it happened. He might have reached out. To do what? He wasn't sure. Stop Stain, put the words back in, grasp at Tony before the world spun out beneath him. He wasn't sure. He couldn't breathe. His mouth wouldn't form the words. "No, stop, don't," that his head was screaming. "Your little whore just bends over for you so his vegetable of a mother can get clean sheets and a bath a day," Stain said lowly, leaning into Tony's space, sharing the secret he'd been hoarding until the worst possible moment. Steve saw the color drain from Tony's face, his eyes go wide and mouth slacken in shock. Tony's eyes locked on his, a horrible question forming in their depths, and Steve had a moment, oddly touched, to think that Tony remembered to ask him when Tony said, is that, Steve? In such an awful, choked voice that Steve wanted to wrap himself around Tony in one fell swoop, but couldn't seem to get his body to move from where he was rooted in place. Steve had a brief flash of hospital linoleum, sign here, please, feeding tube, pupils unresponsive. He couldn't bring himself to answer out loud, but Tony wasn't stupid. He could clearly see the flash of pain across Steve's face at Stain's words. The look of utter and complete horror on Tony's face finally managed to get some momentum under Steve's feet. He intended to go to Tony. He really did. But what actually happened was his fist connected with Stain's jaw, apparently of its own accord. And Stain was flying backwards, landing in a heap on the floor. When Steve looked up, blood pounding in his ears, Happy stood staring bewilderedly at the library doors where Tony had fled. Steve didn't pause to worry about Stain, figuring Happy could handle that, just ran after him. Saw him brush past dinner guests, who turned in confusion at the spectacle of their host crashing through the room, bumping and jostling his way across the living room to the steps leading to the workshop, without paying any heed to what he was doing or the chaos in his wake. Steve didn't care, just raced after him, pushing his way through guests and servers as quickly as he could. He saw Pepper and Rhodey turn to follow Tony's movement with concerned gazes, but Tony was down the steps and through the workroom door before Steve could reach him. Steve reached out to grab the handle to the workroom and pulled. It was locked. "Damn it, Tony," he thought in frustration. "Jarvis, can you open the door, please?" Steve called, unconcerned about the crowd of spectators that had gathered behind him. "I do apologize, sir, but I am currently unable to comply with that request," Jarvis responded, not sounding happy about it. "Tony, Tony, open the door, Tony, please," Steve shouted, pounding against the glass with his fists. "Tony, damn it, open the door." He turned in a circle looking for anything he might be able to use to just break the glass and heard the squeal of tires directly behind the glass. He took the steps two at a time and raced across the living room, flinging open the front doors, a flood of guests following him out the door to see Tony's Audi speed off down the driveway. "God damn it all to hell,"